In the heart of the Protestant Reformation in the 16th century was the phrase, salvation by faith alone. Now, whilst Martin Luther did not wish for the schism that followed, he insisted that the corrupt Roman Church of the medieval era was missing the fundamental core of the gospel, and that the schism was necessary to keep the integrity of the gospel message intact. Part of Luther's insistence on salvation by faith alone was his reading of the book of Romans, of which we have a piece from today, chapter 4. Now, the great Saint Paul was talking about the reasons for the Gentiles to be included in the people of God. And part of his rationale was that Abraham had faith. Abraham believed, which was credited to him as righteousness. So one of the big questions was, should the Gentiles have to follow the law? Should the Gentiles have to be circumcised as one of the big external acts? Well, Paul's rationale, again, was that Abraham's faith preceded circumcision. Therefore, he is the father of both the Jews and the Gentiles who believe, who have faith. Luther and the Reformers, including your own compiler of the Book of Common Prayer, whose name was Thomas Cranmer, excellent. They rightly took the emphasis on faith and grace that Paul taught, and they based the Reformation on it. Now, if there had been one schism, that would be one thing. But here we sit with thousands upon thousands of Protestant denominations. And part of those continuing divisions has always been around issues of faith and works. What comes first? Does it matter? And the battle lines, now literally battle lines, sadly, after the couple centuries after the Reformation, were drawn to separate Roman Catholics from Protestants. And now our swords have been turned into plowshares, or at least we've gone to our computers to fight. But there's still a division between the Church of Rome and the Protestant churches, with the Orthodox, Eastern Orthodox, generally being placed on the Catholic side. And again, faith and works are the substance of this disagreement. Now, I was going to give you an example, but I'm going to skip that example. But you can find people fighting over these things even now, especially on YouTube. Where am I going with all this? Now, we're not going to solve the issue this morning and the role of faith and works. But I do think we need a new way to communicate the gospel in general. Because based on all of your faces, faith and works aren't really a hot topic for you. There are other things to focus on. Now, there's a new book by an obscure New Testament professor in a tiny Franciscan college in Quincy, Illinois. And he's a Protestant, by the way. But his name is Matthew Bates. And it's called Salvation by Allegiance Alone. I can hang my hat on that. And it brings all of the small O Orthodox Christians, Catholic and Protestant, and big O, Orthodox Christians, to the table. And he makes the compelling case that faith is not merely something that we think about, or it's not an emotional decision. Faith equals allegiance. And the word faith and belief in the New Testament is more complex, and it carries with it trust, loyalty, and assent. Faith equals allegiance. Now, I believe this discussion is important because we of Christians of all stripes need to be reminded of Jesus' proclamation of the gospel, which is found from Mark chapter 8. Did Jesus ever say, "Believe in me, have faith in me"? He did in John. But it's a different kind. Again, that word is complex. What does he say here? He says basically three things. This is his gospel message. Deny yourself, take up your cross, and follow me. Salvation by allegiance alone. But we've been told just believe. And that's true. But then what do we do? Now, after Jesus rebukes Peter for misunderstanding Jesus' true message as Messiah, what does he do? And this is important. He called the crowds and the disciples. He called the crowds. And then he said, deny yourself, take up your cross, and follow me. This wasn't like the secret teaching to the disciples. He didn't pull them aside and say, okay, I'm going to tell them that they need to believe, but I'm going to tell you that you need to take up your cross. No, he pulled them all together and said, you who are listening, everyone within the sound of my voice, deny yourself, take up your cross, and follow me. What do these mean? Deny yourself. Now, tradition says that Peter was one of Mark's sources, and I think this is actually kind of delightful for his gospel. And it's fascinating that you see the parallels here. And the first parallel is the use of the word deny. I'll tell you what the other one is in a minute. We know from Mark 14, Jesus told Peter, before the cock crows, you will deny me. And he does. And again, the phrase comes up after he does, and Peter denied, and he remembered the words of Jesus that he would deny him. And yet Jesus says here, deny yourself. Deny yourself. The parallel implies that one will either deny his or herself, or one will deny Jesus. There are no other options. And to make the point, Jesus adds, those who are ashamed of me and my words in this adulterous and sinful generation, of them the Son of Man will also be ashamed when he comes in the glory of his Father with the holy angels. Deny yourself. I thought this was America. We don't deny ourselves. The late Billy Graham said over 25 years ago, what I find disturbing in America is the consuming desire for leisure, convenience, and fun. It seems we as a nation have traded God for gadgets. We have traded eternal truth for a momentary self-gratification, worshiping false gods of materialism and humanism instead of the Creator of all things. So Netflix put out their annual use survey. You should look that up. It's right information that they've provided. And it was done worldwide, not just in the U.S., which is even more fascinating. They found that in 2017, Netflix users watched more than 140 million hours per day. That is 1 billion hours per week. Now put that in perspective. I'm not a math guy. You guys can tell me if I'm wrong. But if all of us, for the sake of argument, live to be 75, we have 657,000 hours to live. Now, I'm not a math guy, again, but I think that means that worldwide we watch enough Netflix for 213 lifetimes in one single day. Deny ourselves. All right, let's just wait for my show to be over. Let me get through this series first, and then I'll deny myself. Now, this is just one small area. Doesn't even speak of the seven deadly sins that we have mastered as a people. And we glorify in all sorts of mediums and ways. Now, few of us are called to be monks or nuns or missionaries, so where do we start? Denying ourselves, I think, in little things. This is where Lent comes in. Lent is a warm-up for denying ourselves. In Lent, we can cultivate something that our world lacks. Self-control, for one. And another one, humility. To deny ourselves is to be humble. C.S. Lewis has some great quotes here. Humility is not thinking less of yourself, but thinking of yourself less. He also says, a humble person will not be thinking about humility. He or she will not be thinking about himself at all. St. Teresa of Avila was often not popular in her time for her reforms of the Carmelite order. Father Albert Holt says about her, when her attempts to reform the Carmelite order attracted vicious, slanderous attacks from enemies who questioned even her chastity, she commented, if they really knew me, they would say far worse things than that about me. So what does that mean for us? Start with humility. And start with the place that we need Jesus and His Word and His strength to face the challenges of our life. Without Him, He says, we are nothing. Secondly, take up your cross. What does that mean? Well, Jesus meant that literally. Now, Mark writes to a community under potential persecution. By the way, if you get a chance to see the new Paul movie that's coming out, it's coming out next month, March 23rd. Sarah and I got to see a pre-screening. It's really good. And you'll be able to see the extent of Nero's butchery. Mark writes, with that shadow of persecution looming, the cross itself was brutal. And it was no wonder. Peter could figure out what Jesus was getting at. Peter understood the implications when he says he's going to be handed over for death. And he tried to stop it. It's no wonder. Cicero said that the cross was the extreme and ultimate punishment of slaves and the cruelest and most disgusting penalty. Josephus wrote that death by persecution was the most wretched of deaths. It is a most difficult thing that Jesus is asking of his hearers, of his disciples, and all who follow him. Come and die. Dietrich Bonhoeffer's famous quote, when Christ calls someone, he bids them to come and die. Jesus clarifies, for those who want to save their life will lose it. And those who lose their life for my sake and for the sake of the gospel will save it. For what will it profit them to gain the whole world and to forfeit their very soul? Indeed, what can they give in return for their soul? The word life and soul, by the way, are interchangeable. Again, I say, Jesus is not saying this just to the disciples, but everyone that can hear him. And we may never face persecution, as many of our brothers and sisters do around the world. But what does it mean for us? go back to my little professor in Quincy, Illinois. Salvation is by allegiance alone. To take up our cross, literally or figuratively, is to discern. First, where is my allegiance? Where does it lie? Charles Chaput says, in our world, everyone is urged to develop an autonomous vision of oneself, distinct from the herd. But each one is also pressed to conform to the opinions and behaviors of the herd. This leads to the culture of simultaneous egotism and groupthink at the same time. We have to evaluate where our allegiance is. Is it all about me? Is it all about the herd? Is it all about the zeitgeist, which means the spirit of the age? Is that where our allegiance lies? Or is it about the Lord Jesus? Is our allegiance to earthly powers? You remember in The Lord of the Rings, when there's the battle between the orcs and men in Middle Earth. And I'm paraphrasing here, but the trees, the talking trees, are asked, what side are you on? And what do they say? Neither. We're not on either side because they are not on our side. That's how it should work for Christians. Christians in the public square. Neither side is on our side. We have to remember that. A practical solution, perhaps. Perhaps a difficult one. Have you ever considered? I'm going to get controversial here. Are you ready? Have you ever considered disaffiliating with your political party because of our allegiance to Christ? We're squirming a little bit, and that's okay. But I think that's a fantastic spiritual exercise because it puts us away from the fray. And suddenly all those attacks that we read about or hear about or watch are no longer directed at us. Just think about that a little bit. And if you don't want to literally do that in your heart. I'm going to divorce this whole discussion and get above it, and see it from a Christian perspective. We can talk about it afterwards. Might be a good Lenten experience. But lastly, and related, follow me. This is really the message of Jesus. It got Paul beheaded. It got Peter crucified upside down. It got many thrown to the lions. Following Christ, living for him, is just as, if not more, difficult than dying for him. Here's the second parallel with Peter. Jesus actually uses the exact phrase when he tells Peter to get behind me and when he tells them all to follow me. The exact same phrase. And it's a true irony. We either get behind Jesus to follow where he leads, or we will get behind him in opposition to where he's leading. We are either disciples or those who are setting our minds not on divine things, but human things, forces of opposition. With Jesus, there's no other option. But with following Jesus that way, there is nothing to lose and everything to gain. Look at where it led Billy Graham. Now, here's some really interesting things. And Billy Graham was a very faithful Baptist to his very death. when he visited the Soviet Union, where do you think he went to church? He went to the Orthodox Church. And he wrote about it, and he said, those churches were packed. I would never see that in North Carolina. Did you know that Billy Graham bailed out Martin Luther King Jr.? That's pretty cool. Did you know that one of Billy Graham's pals was the Catholic evangelist Fulton Sheen. Charlie Sheen's a different guy altogether. But that's pretty cool. This is where Christ led him to go. This is where Christ led him to be. And he got a lot of guff for all those things that I mentioned. A lot. People need to hear, deny yourself, take up your cross, and follow me. People need that message more than any other message. What is it that we always put on our church signs? Everyone is welcome. Duh. What if we put, deny yourself, take up your cross, and follow me? How's that for a message? In a world that John Paul II said was full of people stumbling through life to the very edge of the abyss without knowing where they are going, with the real meaning of life being cast into doubt. We need to hear, deny yourself, take up your cross, and follow me. Amen.